chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Debbie Wolf on the show today. Debbie is an experienced chief people officer. Well, Debbie, I am so excited to have you on the Something Extra podcast. I mean, here's the deal. You and I, every time we talk, we have such an amazing conversation and so rich and so fun and so relevant. So I know that we should expect the same thing for today. We're just going to have fun. Does that sound good?
That sounds great. Yes, we always have a great time. And we also go very deep. We like to dig in deep to things. And
we do. We do. So it's going to be good. And I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you. But I always like to go back and tell our listeners how we meet people, because they always want to know where in the world do you get your guest? And you and I are very fortunate because we are part of an organization. We met through CEO Forum, and there's some really amazing women in that organization. But we have a lot of things in common too, Debbie. And we're going to dig into those. You've been in the staffing world for a long time. So have I. Our faith.
Yes.
Is another very common denominator for us. And then we also, you love being a Gigi and I love being a Yaya.
I sure do.
So you have two grown children, Libby and Nate, three grands. And I just found out you have a fourth one coming.
Yes. A little girl on the way.
Very exciting. And just for our listeners, this is kind of a little trivia. I just found out recently that Debbie's son, Nate, is married to a former Miss America. And she was Miss America in 2017. You can go and look them up. She's got quite a following, Debbie.
She does. She's a remarkable young woman. I mean, I had no real awareness of pageants. That wasn't a world I was familiar with. And we had a crash course, and I really gained an appreciation for it is serious. I mean, the preparing and the studying and coaching, I mean, and she is remarkable. And it's really a cool thing, I think, when the younger generation and especially your kids become people that inspire you. Because I learn from her. I learn from all of our kids all the time. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So it's very special. It is our little fun thing, learning about the behind the scenes. Now she's an influencer, and I'm learning all about what that means too.
Right. So go look her up, listeners, Savvy Shields, and she is married to Debbie's amazing son, Nate. And you're married to Chuck, and you live in South Tampa, Florida,
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. But listen, you didn't grow up there, and no. I love what you talk about. We'll talk about that. So you grew up in New York, Northern New York, in a little town called what?
Painted Post.
And we talked about, I'm like, where in the world did that come from? And you said?
It is a Native American heritage. It was a literal painted post in the middle of town that the Native Americans erected in the city. And so it is still there. And that is where our little town gets its name. Many of the towns around where we live have Indian names, if you will, like Horseheads and Oneonta and Oswego. There's a lot of Native American heritage there.
Right. Well, and then that's something else that we have in common, because I was born and raised in Paducah, Kentucky. And I told you it was founded by Chief Paduke.
Yes.
That's why they call it Paducah. But tell me a little bit, you did grow up in Painted Post. Tell me about growing up.
Very small town. I know when people think of New York, when you say New York, they think of New York City, but it's very much upstate. Small town. My dad was a forester. My mom was a telephone operator back in the day where you had to put the plugs into the wall. Very modest growing up, very conservative, traditional values, if you will. A beautiful place to grow up because it was very small and we could run free. That was great. However, it was also very restricting to me. So I was the first generation to get my college degree. And I had wild ambitions to get out and explore and see the world. I was that child when my parents would go shopping that would get lost, or they would go anywhere. I was a child lost because I was off exploring. And they would get so upset, and sometimes they'd have to call the authorities to come help find me. But that was kind of who I was. And so once I graduated, I left town and I did not go back. I wanted to go explore the rest of the world and see. And I'd never been in big cities. We couldn't go on vacation. So I really hadn't been on any real vacation. So that was my very, very early beginnings.
Well, let me ask you this, because then we're going to talk about this, but you really, you did go to college and you were a scientist, but Yes. Was there something in your childhood, Debbie, that informed you? It probably is, like Dora the Explorer.
I was Dora the Explorer, yes. Oh my gosh, you know what? I would catch bugs. I mean, this now I know is not normal to me, or not common. I shouldn't call myself not normal. It's not common for kids. I mean, I would collect bugs and ants. I would collect things and just watch them and keep them, or else I would just sit outside on the ground for the longest time watching frogs. I'd go to the creek or the creek, however you like to call it, and get tadpoles, and I'd watch them develop. And I loved the mountains, and I wanted to look at the leaves. I mean, I was just so fascinated and curious. And even as a kid, when we would go to the mall, most people wanted to shop, but I wanted to sit and watch people. And I would watch them and wonder, why is that person doing that? Or those people, what are they doing? You know, and I just wondered a lot. I was a very, very curious child. I loved exploring. I loved experimenting. I mean, I used to drive my family crazy at dinner time because I pulled my whole meal apart to look at it, especially if it was chicken or something.
So, right.
Those are things you usually share with people, but that was who I was at that time. And it's still part of me. It really is still part of me.
Well, it explains a lot. Now I understand a lot more, Debbie, because, and we're going to talk about this, but you've done a lot of different things in your career. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is that curiosity. I wonder what it would be like to do that or this. So,
and the constant learning. I just wanted to learn and understand and always push myself to learn something new or try something new. So that was also mixed in there.
I love it. Well, you went to college at Clemson in South Carolina.
That's right.
Very highly rated university, top tier research university, kind of interesting given kind of what we just talked about. But I laugh, Debbie, at what you said, because you said that I'm a damn Yankee in the South.
I know. Well, I could fool people for a little while because I have blonde hair and I could get it and I could get it really big and blonde, and I pick up with accents pretty easily. So I had a little bit of a twang, and people tell me I still have a little bit of one. So people did not know I was a Yankee until they asked me, because they would talk about the Northerners that would come into the South. Mm-hmm. And then they would ask where I was from. And then I'd say New York, and they were appalled. And they're like, oh my goodness, you don't act like one. And I said, yes, I do. I am a Northerner. That's where I was born, grew up. All my family's up there. That's what I know. So
yeah.
But I learned to be able to fit right in, and people become accepting. I think there's stereotypes, as we know, that is something we're all facing now. Stereotypes, bias, and we're understanding how dangerous those can be. And thankfully at the time I had, it was such a wonderful experience. And people, once they get to know you and you get to know them, you realize as humans, you have a lot more in common than not, and you can start to appreciate some of those differences and learn from each other. They helped me learn how to correct some of my speaking too.
I'm sure. It's so true though. I always say that it doesn't really matter where you go, what country you go to. I mean, we're so much more alike than we're different because we're human beings, right,
That's
Debbie?
Right.
So I love that. And we're going to talk about some of those things as it relates to HR. But you do have a degree in biochemistry, but you started in sales, and you said you knew nothing about sales. You started in sales and coordinating, you know, and you were selling lab equipment and scientific type things. And then I laughed at this because you said they shipped you off to Kansas City, and you're like, where am I going? And you said you actually cried.
I did cry, and I was not a crier. I really, like my husband, when we met, he said, what is wrong with you? You never cry. This is unusual. So it really is a true thing. I'm not really usually a crier, but this one had me going. I actually, when I got my biochem degree, my professor said, maybe you might want to look at sales. And I was so offended in a way, because I was like, this is a tough degree. I really, you know, want to do this. But at the same time, I couldn't see myself working at the bench. So my professors actually suggested sales. And I learned that I could go into technical sales. So I sold laboratory equipment. So the whole adventure thing really ramped up when it was go into sales, which you've never done. And I never knew a sales rep except for the people that came to our door to sell vacuum cleaners. That was my only vision of what a salesperson was. And then moved to Kansas City from New York. And I had to look on a map to see which rectangle in the middle of the country it was. So I was like, where? And I go, and I knew nobody there. I remember being on the plane by myself on a US Air flight, and like the second to the last row, looking out the window going, what am I doing? Like, where am I going? And I just kind of cried. It was the first time I felt so alone. But I knew it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. It was just, I think, the reality of I'm really doing this was hitting me. And the emotions just came flooding over me. And then that's where my career journey started, really.
It did. And we're going to dig into that, because you have had an illustrious career. But just if there's a young person out there and they're getting ready to be, it's okay to cry. Just know it's okay to cry. It's okay to lament a little bit and ask yourself, what am I doing? It will be okay.
Yeah, there is more acceptance now, I believe. Back then, as a woman in business, that was the last thing you wanted to do. I mean, you did everything to make sure you kept it together. But I really appreciate, really now, I think the younger generations that have been coming in we've been able to learn from them, and they've been able to lead the way in some areas that have made having emotions is being human, and it's being okay. So I'm really grateful for that. A lot of times people want to give the next generation a hard time, but I think there's so many beautiful things they teach us as well. So
agreed. Well, and I want to talk about this. I mean, talk about being a Dora Explorer. That's what I'm going to call you from now on. But when you were 26 years old, which is crazy to me, Debbie, you cashed in your 401k and you started a staffing company with a partner, and you grew that to, I think, about $500,000 the first year.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And of course, you 26 years old, it took a lot of courage. And you said it at the beginning, you were pretty ambitious and courageous. But what did you learn through that process of jumping onto the entrepreneurial wagon?
Yeah, I was, you know, if I knew what I know that it was involved, I might have been more afraid. But I think I felt as though I had built up enough opportunity that if it didn't work out, I knew I could find work somewhere else. But it was a massive risk because that was just not something that my family was supportive of at all, because it was like, you have a good job with this big company, massive company, did tremendous training, great foundation. But I really believed I was limited and did not have opportunity to grow. And I just was like, I'm going to take this risk. And again, I find the pattern in my life is I tend to move into things and I get excited about things I've never done before. It's just, it is part of the true adventure, but I transfer skills. So it's not reckless in any way. Mm-hmm. So I had never done staffing. I'd never been a temporary, and I didn't really know what a temporary was, but I knew I had a business partner, and we knew we didn't want to start something up like manufacturing would be way too capital intensive,
right?
So we came up with a service idea. And so the transfer was, well, I'm calling on these scientific companies, these manufacturing facilities, food and beverage, R&D, environmental, all kinds of laboratories. It's like, what about if we place people in labs? Because that's the same client base. At this time, it was still a concept sale because staffing at that point in time was much more clerical, industrial. IT was in play and happening, but scientific was just burgeoning. And the candidates found it to be kind of derogatory. Like, they didn't want to do it because it wasn't esteemed enough. And clients didn't trust, like, who's going to want to do this? Mm-hmm. So we had only really one true competitor at the time, and it was a very new open field. And I started off by selling to clients I worked with when I was selling laboratory equipment. So I already had some resumes or some contacts, but then we started building out the business, and I started it on my bedroom floor, just sorting resumes back in the day when you had to mail everything, right?
Right.
You post your ad in the paper on Friday, you get your resumes, you'd sort through them. I'd go to different hotels to do interviews in their lobbies.
Yeah.
And it really worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I know that I grew up in a home that work ethic was instilled. I mean, it was very strict, and grit, resilience was required. So I think in a work ethic, so I think that helped pay off on the entrepreneurial side. But I also mm-hmm. was someone that was, because I think I was so curious, always asking questions. I had advisors all around. I was always asking people questions and having people surround me that knew things I didn't. And mm-hmm. I think people took an interest. People do want to see other people
succeed.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate. And then Entrepreneur Magazine approached us because it was new. It was starting to get attention, and they profiled us in their magazine, and it was really a fun time. And it kind of is amazing that it happened and it worked, because we really were very young, just right. figuring it out.
Sometimes I say ignorance is bliss, though.
Yeah.
Because sometimes not knowing what could go wrong, or not even thinking along those lines, you may not take those risks, but I just love it. But then you basically, I think, sold out to your partner, but started Science Solutions in 1996 and grew that business. But then it was purchased by K-Force, and K-Force is a competitor of ours, large, much, much larger, about 30,000 employees, I think. And then you were there for a while. I think you were president of the scientific, engineering, and legal division, Debbie. Then you took a little bit of a, you know, you took a little bit of a lead from there, and then they brought you back as the SVP for HR.
That's
now,
right.
This is curious, and this has kind of started a whole nother journey for you, because that wasn't necessarily something that you had done before, right?
Right.
But, you know, how did you make that jump? I mean, was that scary at all to think, wow, I've never done HR before, but were you scared at all? or did you just know that, no, I can do this?
Yes, I was scared. I've been scared most of my career journey. But the good thing there was, I think that's when I get at my best. I have to face it and lean into it. What happened with K-Force was we sold the scientific division, and I then elected to step away. I did not go with the buyer. That was a personal and professional choice, because I knew I wanted to take a career. I wanted a career pivot because I loved what I had done. K-Force was so good to me, giving me lots of opportunity to grow that business. But when we sold the business and I left, I got my master's in organizational development. And it was really an opportunity to really put some academic training to a lot of the business training I'd been doing. Because remember, I was a scientist. I learned everything on the street, if you will, you know, and then people that had been in my life to maybe give me some guidance. But I really wanted, because I think I come from that scientific mindset, I wanted some academics. I wanted some science behind what I was doing. So I got my master's, and I'll never forget the first class I sat in on my organizational development class. I was so excited. I could barely be with myself. I went home and I said to my husband, I'm like, I was on the edge of my seat the whole entire class. It was like all of these answers is being explained. Like, why did this work? Why didn't that work? So I committed to working on my master's. And from there, I knew I wanted to pivot from just overseeing really a division to really diving into how to really run the inner operations of an organization from an infrastructure standpoint, because where I was finding my strength was in the building, the scaling, the transformation, all around how do you do that through people? And how do you do that through organizational structure and design and culture? So those really became kind of my passion points. And from there, I did some consulting. So I got my degree knowing that it was going to be very hard to get a job. It was right at the time when the market took a dive in 2009. And it was just me out there building out a client base to do some consulting projects. And then that's when I was in doing that, that's when K-Force called me and said, would you like to come and run our HR department? And I said, I don't know HR. Organizational development's not HR. But they said, well, what we want is someone that really knows culture and transformation, and we'll make sure you learn the technical components of HR. And I thought about it, and I thought, this is an incredible opportunity because it really does allow me to transfer my skills, because what they needed was someone to build and transform and modernize their HR team. Mm-hmm. And department. So that's what I did. And I was nervous because I thought my team, you know, in an organization, there's the front office and the back office. And a lot of times HR isn't always viewed as the most esteemed part of the organization. They oftentimes can be viewed as the policy teams, the one that say no, especially to a sales organization. And I was one of them coming in to my new team. The one that broke, you know, because they knew I came from the front office, the ones that always gave them all the hard time.
Right.
And they also were like, what do you know about HR? So that was the biggest challenge, was building credibility within my own team to be able to create a vision and have them believe in it and move forward. Where I excelled very quickly was I had so much credibility in the organization overall because I truly understood the business and could bring true solutions. And that, I think, helped me know what did the team really need to be to the business to help achieve the goals. So it worked out great, but definitely there's always a component of a weakness that we have to overcome when we're venturing into a new role. Mm-hmm. But leverage on those strengths and just know to be intentional to come up to the level you need to in the areas that would be seemed as important, but could be holding you back if you don't excel mm-hmm. in it.
Debbie, there's so much I love about that. And I know that you had talked to me at one point and you said you think that coming from that scientific background really helped you mm-hmm. because it's not all just fluff. HR is not fluff. You put methods and processes in place. And
yes. To me, it really has a technical foundation to it. I mean, there's obviously psychology. There's psychology from a human standpoint, but there's also organizational psychology when you bring people together. And organizations are a system, a lot of systems that integrate. So I tend to look at everything holistically. Like if you think about just if you use an analogy with a body, I mean, a lot of times something that's impacting one part of the body could be caused by something in another part of the body. So you can't just go to the doctor and say, I have a headache, and all they do is give you aspirin, right? There needs to be a diagnosis. There needs to be more digging and understanding. So because of my curious nature, my need to understand, my need to research, my need to make sure that we're solving the right thing, not just a symptom, has been like, I think my scientific thinking and mindset has worked well. So that happens to be my approach to HR and the people organization and operations. Other people have very successful careers and have their own style and approach. Mine just happens to be, I come from a scientific technical root, kind of grounded. I tend to have frameworks. And because I want to know we can replicate success. I want to know we're getting at the right things. And then when you implement something, it's designed properly. So there's, there's consistency in that. And then the whole change management around it as well.
Right. Oh, my goodness, Debbie, I've got pages and pages and pages of things that I want to talk to you about here. There's so many things, but we do need to take a quick break. And we'll be right back with Debbie Wolf on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with the amazing, incredible Debbie Wolf. So, Debbie, we've already talked about a lot of different things, but you had sent me some information here, and there's a recent Accenture survey that came out and where CEOs are identifying the following as their top growth drivers over the next 3 years. Number one, enhancing performance and productivity. Accessing and creating top talent, driving connection and collaboration across business units, enhancing the company's digital core. So where does HR, where does the CHRO, the CPO, where do they play in this space?
Yeah, I think first it's starting on understanding where is CHRO plays in the organization, because a lot of times that's up for debate, right? Where does the CHRO sit? And my belief and what I see from just even studies that are out there is that this is a key role, much like a CFO. A lot of times if a company's hire a CFO, that individual, the CFO, while incredibly important for obvious reasons, is not a function that can help drive business. They report data. That's what they do, right? It's all very important. And definitely now there's a move for financial people to be more business partners as well, to be more strategic players at the table. Mm-hmm. When you look at this list, you realize how much involves people. And the CHRO is, we agree that it is a technical foundation. There is science behind engagement, experience, culture, structure, design, performance management, retention, hiring, all of those things that are so important for an organization to grow and achieve their objectives. Those are all people. And that individual has to sit right next to the CEO to be able to make the wisest decisions. And there is a balance of power, if you will, if you look at your CFO and your CHRO, and then any other on the executive suite, there are different perspectives that can come to that executive table that the CEO then has a full 360 view to know how to make the best decision. So for example, sometimes you might have a CHRO have a certain perspective on something, and the CFO has a perspective and the general counsel does. the CEO has to listen to all those viewpoints, all the business cases to then make the best decision. If you don't have that CHRO there, you're missing a really critical component, because at the end of the day, the people have to be the ones that make the objectives happen. So enhancing performance and productivity is all about people. When you look at finding and accessing and keeping top talent and upskilling them for the future demands, especially with AI coming in, when you talk about driving connection and collaboration, and also I'll add into this the what's happening in the external landscape that's coming into our business doors, right? Related to now we've got the big return coming back into the office, or political landscape or social landscape, right? Those are three of the four that were listed that are on the top of a CEO's list are falling directly in the CHRO's seat. Now, that doesn't mean that the CHRO is the only one responsible for that. They should, though, be involved in helping build out the strategies for that to then be a key driver and participant in the change management that comes with any new programs or plans, the coordination of that, and really the champion of those strategies. So that's where I see the role being incredibly important for CEOs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an incredibly important role, and it's an incredibly broad role.
It is.
I mean, really broad. It's a huge role when you think about performance improvement, when you think about individual development plans, when you think about comp analysis, when you think of all those things, there it's a big role. In 2017, you left K-Force, became the CPO for Hays, which is another staffing firm. It's publicly traded on the London Stock Exchange. Huge company. I think probably about 12,000 employees in total, 10,000 globally. Big organization. But Debbie, I know that you've got, a lot of thoughts around this and wisdom and insight. But say that there is a listener and they are in the HR organization and they are saying, okay, I think my path forward, I really want to be a chief people officer one day. What would you say? What is that path? What should they be doing? How should they be preparing for that now?
Yeah, if you think first about this being a strategic role, a strategic advisor to the CEO, as well as the executive team, the first thing is to truly be a business partner that has a business mind, understands the business. Not so much being as concerned with the HR technical components, but first understanding the business and then how to bring in the HR areas of expertise that apply to that. So, I mean, it is important to understand how to run a P&L. It's important to understand the pressures and the demands of the business and of the business leaders and of the people that you're hiring. It's also important to understand the competitive landscape and the external market so that you are market aware. You are aware of what trends are happening in the marketplace related to hiring, what's happening with compensation, how are benefits being looked at. Not that you're over managing those, but that you have the awareness of what could be drawing people away or keeping people from accepting opportunities within your organization, or could be advantages in the business. Because the whole role I view is the CHRO role is to help drive the business forward in the top line and support that bottom line as well. So coming in with that mindset is a very big shift of thinking about just programs like well-being or a total rewards program or a performance progression program. Those are incredibly important in tying to strategy, but it has to be what is the overall big picture of where the organization's going and how do you apply those strategies? So they have to be relevant. Mm-hmm. And I would also say you have to have some good skills around change management and project management. So if you are maybe a mid-level HR person at a director level or even perhaps a VP, very important to be able to show you can build some strategic planning around a project and that you can implement that following through with some basic change management skills, as well as understanding the change management process and the psychology of change management to support the leaders on the front line that will ultimately be the ones delivering the change management. So that is key. I think you also have to be an exceptional leader. So I think HR has to set the tone and the example, being the highest of integrity, being the most, a courageous, has to be the courageous department, and really set that tone on leadership and what the right example is, so that you can be that trusted advisor that people come to, because it really is the one team that you want to call when you feel like you might get in trouble or you want to stay out of trouble. We have a thing that says, we're not going to stop you from doing anything. We just want, like, tell me where you would want to go. We want to help you get there safely. Mm-hmm. Right? How do you help your leaders get where they need to go safely? But you have to have that trust built in place. So those are the big things. Strategy, know the business all the way to running a P&L change management, project management. Also, you need to be pretty up on technology now.
Absolutely.
I would add that in too. And that is part of being externally aware of how new technologies are out there, but really being able to have data and translate that, right? I mean, being able to help the executive team make good decisions based on data, because the people side of things often, as I sit in executive rooms, is all about people's guts and opinions and their viewpoint of the 360 world they sit in. But enterprise-wide, you have to have the data and understand how to translate it, know the correlations, and then be able to understand trends and start to get to the point where you can start predicting things so you make better decisions.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue. I want to talk to you about the future of work. So what are you predicting, Debbie, in terms of the future of work? I mean, we've seen a lot of change. I mean, just in the last few years, right, with the pandemic and hybrid workforces, and what are the trends that you're seeing out there, and how do you think about
right now? What is so fascinating is I think everybody would say change has always been happening, right? And we now all agree that it's happening at such a rapid rate. The new thing for me and what I see in organizations and even executive leadership is there is a true sense of we've never been here before. A lot of people get into the senior level roles, and a lot of it is you bring your expertise, your knowledge, and your experience and wisdom from experiences prior, mistakes you've made, things you've learned, people you've learned from, right? And wins you've had, right? You learn from all of those things, books you've read, all the many webinars over all those years, it all compiles. And then we are now in an era, whereas executive teams, you sit there and say, none of that matters. I mean, we've never, like, the things we're experiencing and facing in organizations now are very hard to apply, right? We know this from the very experience of the pandemic. And what do we do with work and return to work? There's still a lot of wrestling around with that. The DE&I has really accelerated, and some companies don't know what to do because they haven't done it before. There's a lot more, things are moving so much faster. Leaders haven't faced some of these things, and they do the best that they can. So I think that that part is so important now, to just be grounded in having data, having the right people, and also making sure that you don't let the pace drive you too much where you get into a chaotic pattern, right? There's this thing called the Stacy Matrix of how organizations can adapt. And I see organizations moving more towards a chaotic mode, and the decision making has to change depending on if you're in like a stable mode, if you're in a growth mode, a complex mode, or you move into chaos. So that is one, is companies have to really start looking at how they do their decision making and have a process around that too, to slow things down to make the right decision. Because what we're seeing is people have to backtrack a lot, right? And then that creates a lot of stress. People are also, I just saw Adam Grant talking about this, and he's talked about how people have so much emotional stress right now, but it's not so much just of feeling all the pressures, but it's that constant heightened sense that there's concern out there, that people are getting emotionally tired being concerned about people that are emotionally tired. So there's always, you know, so there's psychology that's needed, data that's needed, new ways of working that are happening, how to manage the fatigue, because by human nature, people don't want change. And we know some parts of the organization personalities, the creatives, the inventors, the sales teams, they thrive on change and they get excited about that. There's an entirely other part of the population in companies that don't want change at all. And it really creates a dynamic. So it's just important to remember that as the organization grows and not be stuck either on one culture. So cultures are needing to be adaptive now and not say we've got to stay, this is our culture, we're going to keep this culture. It's constantly being aware as leaders, how do we need to adapt our culture to the current state, right? I mean, we've gone through pandemic, we've gone through a lot of social, political changes and disrupt in multiple generations within our organizations that are happening, that we're addressing. And then you've got technology coming, the AI is fast, and people are needing now to adjust to that. So it is really such a interesting time, like nothing I've ever seen in my career. And I'm not opposed to change. You can see I've changed my, I've moved a million times. I'm like all about an adventure, but I got to tell you that this really is a different time. And I do believe we have to be thoughtful and wise. And I got to tell you too, I pray a lot. Sometimes you just got to pray because you're like, I need a divinely inspired direction here at this point in time, because it is multifaceted.
Yes.
Complex.
It is complex. And I could not agree with you more. There's so much coming at us. Mm-hmm. Debbie, and I see what you're talking about, the chaos in the decision making, because there's so many voices out there. You should be looking at DEI and belonging, and you should be looking at this and this and this and this. And it can be tiring. Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say it can be really tiring. So I'm with you. I need supernatural direction every single day to prioritize and to focus on those things that matter the most, really.
Yeah. And I think it's also incredibly important for CEOs to, and even if they have to bring in outside experts to support them in executive alignment, because in these discussions in the boardrooms, I've seen this personally of my own witness, but I also know there are other studies that have been done on executive alignment. The executive teams are also having a hard time coming into alignment around what to do and some of the key decisions, because it comes down to beliefs. It's not, again, it's not, oh, we did it that way and this is how we do things here. You're facing new things. And so it's really important for the executive team to be common and very, very solid on the purpose, solid on the values, create guiding principles of how you will make decisions. So when everyone is not aligned, you have a North Star to point to
or to go back
to help you. Yeah. Because without executive alignment, it goes through the entire business and it just makes it harder on everybody. And then I feel as though people spend more time trying to figure out what's going on than getting the business done.
Good
right?
point.
It impacts the communication chain, because people aren't able to know like what's really happening. So I think that's another really important shift that needs to happen.
So good. Debbie, I think we're going to have a part two. Because there's so much here. I mean, you and I have spent a lot of time in sidebar conversations about purpose,
right?
And getting clarity around that. You've got, just as an organization has purpose, individuals need that as well. And you have got a system, if you will, or a process that you go through to help you gain clarity. I'd love for listeners to know more about that. I'm hoping our listeners will go and follow you, though. I'm just going to read a few things here. Debbie's been a guest lecturer for the executive MBA and doctoral programs at the University of South Florida. You've spoken on entrepreneurship, leadership, organizational development. You've been a contributing writer for Forbes, the HR Council. You've appeared on Bloomberg. We'd said it before, profiled in Entrepreneur Magazine. You received so many awards and so many honors over your career, Debbie. Most recently, you were recognized as an SIA, which for our listeners who don't know, that's the Staffing Industry Analyst. It's a subscription out there, an organization that really focuses primarily on staffing. But you were a global power, 150 women in staffing, SIA, DE&I influencer, Tampa Bay Businesswoman of the Year honoree. I mean, the list goes on and on. So here is why I'm saying all that. I know, Debbie, that you're a very humble person and you probably wouldn't have wanted me to even say those things, but I want people to understand that you have a lot of knowledge. And so listen to this podcast. Go follow Debbie. She writes, as I said, for Forbes. You've got so many articles, and for the sake of time, we don't really have the time to go through these, but one is, does your organization have an effective learning culture? And here's key strategies to consider. She talks about enabling, encouraging knowledge sharing, offering micro learning, encouraging reflection in your organization, rewarding continuous learning. It's the sticks and the carrots, right? So put the carrots out there and reward it when people go and learn. Give meaningful, constructive feedback. How important is feedback, Debbie?
It's so valuable, right? We all want it, need it, and it is fuel. It's a catalyst.
Absolutely. You have got an article out there, Building a Talent Community. Do potential candidates know who you are? It's very important. This is part of our digital presence, having a digital presence. I mean, the thing is, candidates, we say this all the time, they have so many choices. Why would they choose you? Right. You've got to put information out there, build a culture that people want to work for. Because as we've said before, all of these things that are top of mind, most of them involve people, right? So people, I recently, because you hear this adage a lot, Debbie, people are your greatest asset. Well, Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A, he was the vice president of high performance leadership for Chick-fil-A. He says the way that Chick-fil-A thinks about it, people are a gift.
They're
not an asset. They're a gift to your organization. And your job as a leader is to steward the gift. To give them opportunity to grow, right, as individuals and as professionals. There's so much. I just want our listeners to go and follow you on LinkedIn. She's on LinkedIn. Like I said, she's got amazing, amazing content out there. If you want to know what she's thinking about DE&I and belonging, reach out to her. I know she's got a lot of thoughts around that. But, you know, Debbie, right now, you're the interim CHRO and COO for what your husband, Chuck, is doing, Faith Academics. Can you just give us a little glimpse of that? And then we're going to move to something extra.
All right. Yes, he's branching out to be an entrepreneur now. And that's been just such a delight. And it's been a tremendous privilege to be a part of that with him and support some of the foundational pieces from an infrastructure standpoint for him, but it is an online Christian school. So for K through 12, and it's an opportunity from a school choice standpoint for parents that are finding the traditional brick and mortar schools are not working for them. So it's an alternative, and we are doing that in the US as well as internationally. So it's been really fun to see that grow and for me to learn a little something new in another industry.
Absolutely. So how could our listeners find out more about that?
They can go to faithprep.com.
Faithprep.com. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Hopefully you'll have some traffic on that website. So Debbie, this is called Something Extra.
Yes.
What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
This is tough because there's a lot of stuff that's extra, but one of my favorite quotes is brave is not something you feel, it's something you do. And as I was thinking about a lot of our discussion, we just, it's being brave along in the journey. And sometimes you'd ask me, were you nervous? Were you scared? And I said, yes. And I remember saying that to my team one time. I did a training and I asked them, you know, we talked about it and they said, do you get afraid? And I said, I'm scared all the time. And they were shocked. I'm like, it's just, but that doesn't mean that you don't move forward. Right. Fear is, to me, meaning you're right on the verge of growth. Oh, you're right on the verge of learning something new. You're right on the verge of a breakthrough. So you do brave. So sometimes people think I did brave and then they think, well, I was scared and they negate what they did. And it's like, but it's not a feeling. You ultimately take the action. And I think as a leader, it's so important to be brave. You've got to be brave to ask the tough questions, to say truth or speak truth to power. Mm-hmm. You've got to be true. You've got to be brave to sometimes say no, to be a leader that doesn't want to just be liked, right? I mean, right. You just have to be brave. And that comes to me, the foundation of that is all kinds of things like integrity and truth and confidence and patience and faith. It just ties up so many other values. So that I is love what it. I believe.
Don't be brave, do brave.
Yes.
That is beautiful. Well, Debbie Wolf, I seriously think you and I could like just spend days together.
This has been such a treat and it's always a blast to get together with you. I'm so thankful and so grateful that you asked me to join you and to talk about all these things because it is really my passion. It is my sport and I love this stuff. So I really am thankful and have enjoyed having a chance to talk about this with you.
Well, thank you so much and look forward to seeing you hopefully soon.
Very good. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.